Oh, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm very excited to have Matt Geiger back on the show. He is the managing partner of MJG Capital Fund, which is a fund focused on the resource sector. I have had Matt on the show once before, and he is quickly turning into one of my favorite go-tos for resource comments. He is a bit younger, I believe around my age, so it is refreshing to see someone younger in the crowd. Plus, he's been making very nice returns with his resource fund, which even during those slow years, hey, it takes skill to do something like that. Matt, I want to start off with more broad comments when we talk about trade wars. You and I haven't talked about trade wars on this show before, so I wanted to get your thoughts on how a potential trade deal, now we're not saying when that deal would come, but a potential trade deal with China and how it would relate to the U.S. dollar. Or would you see the dollar moving in a bullish sense or more in a bearish move?
It's a great question, Corey. And first, it's great to be back on the program. I want to wish a happy 4th of July weekend to your U.S. listeners, at the very least. So potential trade deal and the effect on the USD. My hypothesis at the moment, this is subject to change, but is that a trade deal between the U.S. and China would cause weakness in the U.S. dollar, so it'd be bearish the USD. I say this for a couple reasons. The first is that I would argue that so far, the dollar has been a beneficiary of trade war tensions because investors around the world have flocked to the USD as a quote-unquote safe haven amid these choppy waters and uncertain waters. Meanwhile, a deal would almost certainly be viewed as a quote-unquote risk-on event that would sap the safe haven appeal that the US dollar has enjoyed over the past 18 months. So I think a trade deal would be viewed as risk-on, and there'd be less of an incentive to hold U.S. dollars or the more conservative U.S. Stock markets, you know, relative to emerging markets per se.
Hey, that completely makes sense considering, you know, you look at what the dollar has done in the face of this trade war, and it has been bullish for the U.S. dollar. If we then take this into the metals, though, let's start off with the precious metals. If it is, let's say, bearish the U.S. dollar, you would think that would help the precious metals. However, if there is this more risk-on attitude, then that wouldn't help the U.S. dollar. So where does this tug of war end?
Fair enough. So I think, I guess I would say in terms of the likelihood of a trade deal in these coming months, my sense is that we will see some sort of resolution before the next U.S. presidential election. But in the meantime, I think we'll be in this twilight zone where the deal seems close and then farther off, and we kind of go back and forth between, you know, press reports from the U.S. and China. So I don't see anything in the imminent future. The reason for that is that President Trump, I think, politically likes the trade war. It shows that he's being tough on China and standing up for lost manufacturing jobs, you know, for the United States working class. So as long as the U.S. markets are hitting 52-week highs and the Fed is, you know, showing some willingness to consider cutting rates, then I think Trump has no incentive to cut an immediate deal. So kind of with this framework in mind, I think gold, silver, you know, and the other precious metals, the PGMs, can continue to run in this type of environment. I'm not expecting a violent spike, but I think the technical level that we've broken within the past month is a very big deal. And so I think the precious names can continue to move. Base metals, I expect, should remain largely range-bound. I think the effects of the trade war have been largely built into the prices of, you know, copper, zinc, and tin, iron ore, what have you. I do think the price dynamics for each of these base metals will depend also on individual supply-demand characteristics. And so in this environment, kind of switching to some of the junior names, I think the high-quality juniors focused on either precious metals or base metals should be able to create value in this type of market environment. The big risk, of course, is an acute global recession, you know, and or a 2008-like liquidity crisis, which could be painful for junior investors of all stripes. Even in the precious metals, a liquidity crisis would be very painful in the short term.
Yeah, that's one thing to always keep in mind, is that as much as you want to be optimistic on resource stocks during a recession or downturn, fact of the matter is they get sold off with pretty much everything else. Just one more comment regarding this trade deal is that even if we get a trade deal, there's been a lot of comments that maybe the trade deal is more or less weak in the sense that it doesn't get everything solved and a deal just gets done for more political reasons. Plus the fact of the world is in this slow growth at best type of environment, and a trade deal to me doesn't seem like it's going to change anything. So maybe that ties into some of the base metal comments where it comes down more to what actually goes on in the economy. What do you think about that concept, though, that a trade deal, albeit could be viewed positively initially, when people dive in, they'd see that, you know what, even with this trade deal, we're still stuck in this slow growth environment.
I think it's a fair point. I mean, I think the trade deal will be more psychological than anything. I don't know if I expect any major structural reforms, no matter how hard Trump and his team of advisors push. I think it would more be the point of coming to a resolution would be as a political victory than both the U.S. and China would declare victory. So in terms of, you know, the trade deal, I do think psychologically for the markets in the immediate aftermath would be a strong risk on event, as I've mentioned. I do think after a few months of reflection, people will start to dwell on the slowing growth, both in the U.S. and beyond. But I will say that central banks globally have shown that they care solely about growth and also maintaining the stock market's meteoric rise that we've seen over the past 10 years. Stoking inflationary pressures doesn't seem to be a worry. You know, a lot of people, including those of our age, you know, weren't even around for the 1970s. So the thought of an inflationary panic is so far off the radar that I think the central banks will err towards stimulating growth at all costs. So, you know, that could still be bullish in at least the medium term for most asset classes as they continue to try to stoke the flames.
Okay, let's move a little bit more into the junior mining sector, which you really do specialize in. We have had that nice breakout in gold above that 1370 area, which was multi-year resistance. So gold touching levels that we haven't seen in about 6 years. But with the stocks, you look at GDX, GDXJ, they also did break out, but not in the same degree. They're touching levels that we haven't seen since 2016. So still multi-year levels and highs for these. What do you think, though? Is this junior mining cycle, I guess, just getting going, this potential new bull market?
So I am now of the view that we have been in a stealth bull market, actually, since the depths of tax loss selling in late December 2018. So I think we discussed this during the last interview, but my view is that we were in a bull market, a junior mining bull market between January of 2016 all the way till January of 2018. Then last year was a dumpster fire, I would describe it as, for investors in this space. And so I think it's pretty indisputable that we were in a bear market through the whole of 2018. That said, starting in the depths of tax loss season, it did look like a bottom had potentially been put in. And I've been thinking this for some time, that this was a distinct possibility, but it really was too early and uncertain for me to make a definitive call. However, for a few reasons, and you've mentioned a couple of them here, I'm now of the belief that we are indeed in a stealth bull market that's been going on for roughly 6 months, and I believe this for a handful of reasons. So the first is the strength in gold that you mentioned, and gold can often serve as a bellwether for the rest of the mining space. As most of your listeners are probably aware, gold broke through that key 1370 technical level. That gold failed failed to break on multiple occasions, I think 4 to 5 different occasions in the previous 5 years. So this is a pretty significant development. In the weeks since, gold has risen as high as 1440, and seems to have settled comfortably into this new trading range. So confirming this breakout on June 21st, we also saw the largest gold-focused ETF, the GLD, see record inflows, which is the most on a single day in the ETF's 15-year history. This, as you mentioned, the GDX, GDXJ, Sprott Gold Miners ETF, while they aren't, rocketing to, multi-year highs, they're also have hit 52-week highs within the past, you know, 5 or 6 trading days. So I think that's also confirmation of this. And then, you know, my view is that this outperformance will trickle down to the gold explorers and the gold developers in these coming weeks and months. So I'm not too worried about the lack of action we've seen amongst the junior names. I think that if these trends continue, that's just a matter of time. I will say, secondly, I believe we're in a stealth bull market because the major diversified names are also hitting 52-week highs. So this isn't just a gold story. If you look at the share prices of BHP, Rio Tinto, Fortescue, you know, these major mining companies that have their hands in dozens of different commodities, they've all hit 52-week highs just in the past few trading days. So this is indicative, to me at least, that there's more to be excited about than simply the precious metal equities. You know, as we've discussed, it may take a U.S.-China trade deal. In fact, it will likely take a U.S.-China trade deal for the base metals juniors to really, really start outperforming. But I think in the meantime, the high-quality, well-managed names should be able to get traction and create value. And finally, quickly here, the third reason I'm confident we're in this stealth bull market is anecdotally through the performance of the MJG fund. I won't be announcing our 6-month results at this point. I want to wait till our investor letter goes out later in July. But I can say that it was our third best 6-month period since the fund's inception. And it's the best 6 months of performance we've had since the second half of 2016. And even though there's been extreme pessimism pervading the junior space over previous months, I've heard multiple people say this is the worst mining market they've ever seen. To me, the fund's outperformance is evidence that the top stories are receiving actually a fair amount of investor attention, though I will say that the vast majority of juniors are struggling. This is why I describe this as a stealth bull market, as I said, and rather than, you know, a raging bull market where a rising tide lifts all boats. So those are kind of the three reasons why I now feel that we've been in a stealth bull market for the past 6 months in the junior space.
Those are completely fair reasons. And you know what? From a historic standpoint, that is a lot of these factors that you point out are what we have seen as the bull market gets going. The large guys, the large miners move first, the diversified names, and then some of the high quality juniors also start to move. And then finally, we get to that time when even the not so good companies are also moving higher just because people want to invest in the sector. And boy, companies are real cheap market cap wise. Let's talk about some of the companies that you are excited about. What can you share with us, please?
Sure. So I'll talk about a few drilling plays. Two of these are holdings of the MJG fund. I want to emphasize these aren't recommendations for your listeners. We all have different risk preferences and different portfolio diversification that works for us. However, these are names that are currently undergoing drill programs right now that I'm excited about. So the first is a company called Adriatic Metals, who are working on their Rupice discovery in Bosnia-Herzegovina. So it is a bit of a spicy geopolitical jurisdiction, you could say. But the discovery they have here is absolutely world-class. And even for those that are unwilling to invest in a place like Bosnia, it's still one to watch closely. This was actually our featured investment in the fund's January 2019 investor letter. And I view it as really the best, the top mineral discovery globally in 2018. The company is just hitting obscene grades of 64 meters in one case of 26 grams per ton gold equivalent. I will say there's 5 different metals contributing to that gold equivalent grade. So you need to factor recoveries in and be a little bit more conservative than that. But these are just obscene grades that if located in Canada or the United States or Australia, you know, this company would have a market cap that's 3 to 4x higher than its current state. The company based on these grades, I think a resource of only 8 to 10 million tons, which in the mining world is small, but I think that even a small resource based off of these grades will see an NPV likely north of $1 billion and potentially higher. And the company is currently undergoing a 20,000-meter drill program, which will continue throughout the rest of this year. The company is well capitalized and has the sufficient funds to do this. Any day now, we should get the drill results from some crucial step-out holes that are being drilled to the north of the Rupice discovery in what's called the Rupice Northern Extension. And these have the potential, depending on what is hit, to really move the share price. Just in the past week, we've also seen recent open market buying by Aussie base metal producer Sandfire, which I think validates the world-class potential of this project. I don't think we'd see a billion-dollar-plus company wading into it if they didn't think that there was major upside. Sandfire now owns 11% of Adriatic, and they look poised to make a run at the company and try to take over Adriatic as soon as its acquisition of Mod Resources is complete. So Adriatic's an exciting one to watch. The second one is Chicana Copper, which is the most recent open market position that we've added to the MJG portfolio. This company is also drilling 20,000 meters this year, which in the junior world, as you know, is a very hefty total. The wait for permitting has been a problem for this company. They're based in Peru, and as many South American investors would attest, the Peru permit situation has been in flux over the past couple years. And so the permitting waits are the reason why the company's share price has been in the doghouse. However, the rocks aren't going anywhere, and the company has a healthy working capital position to drill some high-impact targets this year that haven't been drill-tested before. And some of these examples include the Pipe 3 West, Pipe 7, Huancarama, and then the Paloma and Paloma East and Paloma West pipes. So there's a lot of untested land to be drilled this year. Additionally, similar to Adriatic, where Sandfire is validating the world-class potential of the deposit, here you have the major gold producer, Gold Fields, putting in $8 million into Chicana just within the past 60 days. This also happened at a pretty substantial premium to the company's current share price. So I think this one, too, even though there has been some chatter amongst the geological community that maybe there's not enough meat on this bone, maybe this isn't big enough, I think Gold Fields' conviction in the project and their recent investment kind of puts those worries to rest. And then the final name I'll touch on briefly here is a name called Radius Gold, which is a post-discovery drill play that I've been watching closely. It's not a current holding of ours, but it's definitely an interesting story right now. They're working on the Amalia project down in Mexico. It's a joint venture with Pan American Silver, who's funding exploration expenditures in order to gain up to a 75% stake in the project. I will say there was some funny business with insider buying and selling, within the days before and after the discovery hole, which is a big red flag for me. But geologically, some geos and technical folk that I trust think that Amalia really has major potential here. And similar to Adriatic Rupices, due to the grades, you don't have to have that large of a deposit in order to see NPVs north of, $500 million U.S. or so. So this is one to watch. There's potential value creation there. I would maybe take a look at buying it below 20 cents. And there should be drill results out imminently for that story as well. So a couple ones for your listeners to put on their radar, and they can always reach out to me directly if they have questions about any of these names.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Matt. And if anybody wants to get in touch with Matt, please just email me, fleck@kereport.com. I'm happy to put you in touch. One thing that I think we can all take away from those companies that you like, some similarities there, one being cashed up and have large drill programs. They also have larger companies buying the share. And it's all about high grade, right? High grade findings and the potential to expand on that high grade. Yeah, there's no secret to what goes on for exploration companies and what drives them, but it's tough to drill right now, and it's tough to find high grade. And hey, some of those companies, in all fairness, one that I have not been following, I will look into a little bit more. I appreciate all those insights. Matt, it's great having you on the show. I love reading over your stuff, and I love that you take some time and share your thoughts with our audience. Have a great rest of your weekend. That goes for everybody. And Matt, I'll be having you back on the show again sometime soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Corey. Take care.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.